favor of the meeting agenda and the amendment as suggested by Bob Lynn, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Agenda is approved. Moving on to public hearings and bid awards, there are none. The next item is visitors' views related to the agenda. Do we have any visitors who wish to speak on items related to the agenda? Please step up to the mic.
I can talk when the item comes up.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
16C.
All right. Next item, and before I move on, is there anybody else? Next item is visitors' views unrelated to the agenda. Is there anybody that wishes to speak on items unrelated to the agenda? And we do have Susan Harai from Petersburg Indian Association who wants to do a video and provide information on PIA's contributions to the borough. So please step up.
Hello. Leah Luzak invited me to speak at the Southeast Conference.
If you can wait a second, we'll get the mic over so folks who are listening in can hear at least the audio portion. Thanks.
Leo Luzak had invited me to speak at the Southeast Conference on PIA's relationships with the U.S. Forest Service and the Petersburg Borough. So I put together a little video that starts at the beginning and goes through our, since the program began approximately in 2006. And if you have any questions afterwards, oh, Marianne Rainey here is here representing the Petersburg Indian Association Tribal Council.
Petersburg Indian Association, PIA, a presentation highlighting our transportation partnerships, achievements, and future goals. PIA, rooted in the past, looking toward the future. The Tribal Transportation Program, TTP, addresses transportation needs of the tribe by providing funds for planning, design, construction, and maintenance activities. The purpose of the TTP program is to provide safe and adequate transportation and public road access to and within our community. A prime objective of the TTP program is to contribute to economic development, self-determination, and employment of PIA tribal members and Native Americans. Since 2006, PIA has been awarded approximately $10.2 million for the Tribal Transportation Program. PIA began their TTP program with the Bureau of Indian Affairs and a 20-year long-range transportation plan. The plan outlines the transportation priorities of the tribe within the community of Petersburg and its surrounding boundaries. The boundary limits of the Petersburg Indian Association Tribal Transportation Program are situated within Southeast Alaska as depicted in this map. Planning continued with a 5-year Tribal Transportation Improvement Plan, TIP. The financially constrained TIP is a prioritized list of projects funded for the next 5 years. To accomplish Petersburg Indian Association's transportation goals, PIA partners with the State of Alaska, the Petersburg Borough, and the U.S. Forest Service through cooperative road and project agreements. PIA's first transportation project supplemented a project which was planned and designed by the State of Alaska. PIA gave approximately $600,000 toward the paving of Mitkoff Highway. With a goal of the TTP program being to contribute to the employment of PIA tribal members and Native Americans, PIA started their own in-house construction crew. To date, 32 tribal members have been employed, and this season was typical with a crew of 10 employees. PIA funded the design of the Mitkoff Coastal Path Handrail, a State of Alaska Department of Transportation project for approximately $60,000. The handrail was constructed by PIA's in-house construction crew. New handrail on the Mitkoff Coastal Pathway. Approximate cost $800,000. PIA partnered with the Petersburg Borough and paved Dolphin, Halkin, and First Streets. PIA paid for the design, handled the traffic control with their construction crew, and hired CECON as the paving contractor. Dolphin Street paving, approximate cost $570,000. Hauken and Joa Streets paving, approximate cost $650,000. Another project PIA partnered with the Petersburg Borough on was the construction of the parking lot and access road for the Petersburg Archery Range, cost $10,000. Working together with the Petersburg Borough on a Resource Advisory Committee RAP grant, PIA improved Greens Camp on Midtop Island. The tribe paid for the boxed arched culvert material at Greens Camp, approximate cost $85,000. Other work PI did at Greens Camp was road resurfacing, culvert installation, picnic tables, fire rings installed, and landscaping picnic areas. Total cost $130,000. In 2010, with our funding, PIA reconstructed the first street sidewalk, approximate cost $800,000. New reconstructed sidewalks on First Street. On the sidewalk project, a small retaining wall was built to solve the foundation failure of the sidewalk and roadway. There were also existing drainage problems solved by putting in new storm drains. The 2012 and 13 sidewalk project was the upgrading of 1.5 miles of driveway curb cuts on North Nordic and Sandy Beach roads for ADA compliance, approximate cost $550,000. This year's sidewalk project is the reconstruction of sidewalks in front of the elementary school. Half the project was completed at a cost of $400,000. The north side sidewalks for the school will be reconstructed in 2015. Future plans with the Petersburg Borough are to reconstruct all city sidewalks that are failing and upgrade to current ADA standards. Since 2009, PIA has partnered with the U.S. Forest Service. PIA has contributed over $3 million in maintenance work. Pictured here are PIA employees grading and blading roads. The crew replaces and installs culverts on U.S. Forest Service roads. PIA replaced and installed bridge decking at Falls Creek. This year, PIA entered into a maintenance service agreement with the Forest Service. The tribe was reimbursed $31,000 for blading and rolling Forest Service roads. Future plans for the U.S. Forest Service maintenance include adding trails, cabins, and boat ramps. Present and future plans for Petersburg Borough maintenance include sign maintenance, brushing, straightening, cleaning, and installation of signs, snow removal, sidewalks and around fire hydrants, gravel roads, grading, blading, and rolling, and roadside brushing. For future planning, projects that are within the 2-mile radius of the elementary school will be given funding priority. The state of Alaska has a program called Safe Routes to School. This program aims to promote increased safety for children walking or biking to school within a 2-mile radius. The tribe has applied for a $12,500 Federal Lands Highway Safety Grant to develop a tribal transportation safety plan. The tribe will work with the Petersburg School District Safe Routes to School contact and the Petersburg Borough's public safety officers to develop this plan. A geographic information system, GIS, mapping technician has been hired by PIA to organize the transportation data, and she is currently working with the Petersburg Borough to convert the borough's AutoCAD data to GIS. This GIS transportation data system will benefit both the borough and PIA for future planning. Future trail plans. The Petersburg Borough Parks and Recreation Department has teamed up with PIA on 2 trail grants during 2014. The first grant is for $60,000 in materials for the City Creek Trail. PIA is supplying the labor for the trail improvement project. The second grant is now being written for the Hungry Point Tie-In Trail. This grant is worth between $10,000 and $50,000. Future bike path plans. The state of Alaska has an existing bike path on Haugen Street. ADOT has designed the continuation of the path. PIA plans to connect to the bike path and continue along Sandy Beach Road. Future bridge plans. PIA is working with the Petersburg Borough on a funding grant from the Tribal Transportation Bridge Program for replacement of the Rasmus Inge Bridge. PIA is looking forward to moving with our State of Alaska, Forest Service, and Petersburg Borough partners on down the road. Thank you for allowing us to share with you our transportation partnerships, achievements, and future goals.
Thank you, Susan.
Thank you, Susan.
Is there any, did you have more?
No, I just thought it would be it was a good introduction because most of you probably don't know the relationship that PIA has with the borough, and I thought it would be good information.
Does anybody have any questions of Susan? Oh, come on.
I think
on.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah,
it's great.
Yeah, I do too.
Everything you guys are doing for us here.
Most of you know John Haverlick was the PIA tribal administrator for many years, and he was the one that actually got the whole program started, and PIA was one of the very first tribes in Alaska to get funding, and we still have funds that we are using up from that he got for PIA. So thank you, John.
I have one question for you, Susan, and actually it might be a better question to ask the Forest Service, but I did see that you mentioned that you hope to work on trails and cabins and boat ramps for the Forest Service in the future, mm-hmm. and I know their recreation budgets have been declining. So can you speak a little bit to that? Will PIA be maintaining those facilities, or would they become a Forest Service obligation, or has there even been thought about that?
Yes, right now I'm working with the Forest Service, and we're working on a trails agreement for cabins and so forth. There's a lot of bureaucracy that we go through to use our funding, and we have to have a 5-year transportation improvement program TIP. We have to have the trails and cabins added to our inventory, and that's where we're at right now. Once we get the trails and cabins approved through BIADOT, then we can spend money on them, and so that's the plan. For 2015, it will be borough trails.
Okay.
Because it was just smoother to work with the borough.
Mm-hmm.
Not that the Forest Service wasn't very helpful, but it just there's so many more trails. I think the borough has 6, and we'll be reconstructing for handicap access on the City Creek Trail from Sandy Beach. And the hope was that when people come to visit, some of the elderly could get off the bus, and that trail is pretty primitive, so they could kind of walk for the first, I think it's a quarter of a mile maybe not that long, and circle around up to the top of the road and then back.
Yeah.
And the rest would remain primitive, but that's Parks and Rec's goal at the moment.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right, the next item on our agenda is board, commission, and committee reports, and I don't have any listed. Are there any late breaking? Hearing none, the next item is the consent agenda, and there were no items on the consent agenda this meeting. And the next item is report of other officers. Any report of other officers? Hearing none, the next item is the mayor's report, and the mayor did leave some information. The first item on the mayor's report is appointments to the Historic Preservation Committee. The borough has heard from Don Nelson and Janet Holton of their interest to serve on the committee. If there are no objections, Mr. Nelson will be appointed as the committee historian and Ms. Holton as a member at large. The additional at-large position will replace the code-suggested archaeologist position, and I assume there's no objections to those appointments. All right. And thank you very much for both to Janet and to Don for offering to serve. Item number 2 is the cost of travel to D.C. The total estimated cost for travel to D.C. in February is under the prior approved amount of $9,000. The total estimated cost is $8,690, and this represents the cost of adding the vice mayor as a representative to meet with our delegation. The travel also overlaps participation in the Alaska Municipal League Legislation Conference in Juneau. And just to clarify, I think Mark's going to Municipal League, and I will be going to DC and Juneau, but I will not be going to Municipal League. Item three is a reminder, there's a change in the November meeting schedule. Due to several assembly members attending the AML conference, the second meeting in November was rescheduled to November 24th at 7 p.m. And the final item is the public community meeting with DEC regarding state regs on herbicide and pesticide use. At the time of the agenda preparation for this meeting, we have yet to secure a meeting date from DEC or from the Alaska Department of Transportation. And then I have the letter of interest both from Don Nelson and Janet Holton expressing their interest in being appointed to that committee. Moving on to... Yes.
I have a question.
Yes.
Pertaining to this cost to travel to D.C.?
Yes.
That is going to be sometime in November. You're going to go?
No, it will be in February.
Oh, it'll be in February. Okay. Okay. And you, now Mark asked us to approve this the last time he asked us, and we tabled it until we could figure out what the costs were going to be. So do we need to have a motion to approve that travel expenditure, or do we? Or do we just assume it's going to happen?
You've actually already proved it. You just wanted to know what the cost was.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, we had come up with a dollar figure.
Okay. I rescind that.
Okay. Any other questions? Moving on to manager's report.
Due to the travel schedule, don't have a formal report, but I did have three items I'd like to address, if it's okay. The first, many of you are probably already aware, but Kathy is leaving us. She's retiring at the end of March of 2015. Our plans are to promote the deputy clerk into that position, Debbie Thompson. What I'd like would be for the assembly to take kind of the next month and feed me any comments you may have. Hopefully all pro, but if you have concerns, please feed that to me. Kind of the schedule would be December 1st, go over that with the assembly, and then assuming everything stands up well, the first meeting in March is March 2nd. We would have Debbie take over at that point and start running things while we still had Kathy for another 30 days. So we have continued the nice transition. So that's the current plan, but I wanted to make sure everybody's aware and feed me your comments if you have any. I have included, it is a copy of the service matrix that I've put together based on the assembly. When we get to that part of the agenda, it'd be really helpful if the assembly kind of vets this and says, you like it, change it, don't do something. Been asked to put it on the website. I'm happy to do that. I just wanted to make sure the assembly first says, yeah, this is what we want, or if you don't want it in a different format. Take a hard look at that. You should all have a copy of it. If you don't, I can get it to you. The last result, you may remember back in one of my reports, we talked about refinancing some of our bonds. These are school bonds. One of them was for the, I guess, vocational center. The other was for the aquatic center. That is complete with a savings of just over $280,000 in interest savings based on. So that's done and signed off on.
Awesome.
That's it, unless there's questions for me.
I didn't pass your major.
Oh, sorry. Thank you.
If you take one and pass it along.
Steve?
Yes, sir.
I just had a question, and maybe you're going to get onto it later. The resolution we were looking at sending to DEC about the not spraying the herbicides and pesticides, is that still in process, or what are we looking at now?
No.
What we got, Eric, was a road. You wanted to do an ordinance similar to Skagway. Okay, and we haven't put that draft together yet.
Okay.
And the other thing, too, is we're kind of dragging a little bit, too, to see if DEC will ever show up here. I mean, they've been promising for almost 3 months, yes, we're coming. They're supposed to be here in November. I haven't heard anything from them. But, yeah, staff is supposed to draft an ordinance for you guys to consider or talk about before you consider it first read.
Thank you. I made one back there. I took this. I did. Thanks for the reminder.
Thank you.
Yeah, I did take the Skagway ordinance. It's fairly expansive, and one of the questions I had was, I don't know if folks noticed it, but the Skagway ordinance doesn't apply to state lands.
Yeah. That's correct.
It very clearly says the opposite. I'm assuming, what I was hearing from the assembly was you want it to apply to state lands here. So before I made that change, I
think there's a legal question there, though, is whether or not we can make it apply to state lands. That I think needs to be researched first before we spend a lot of time. The other part of that ordinance, in my mind, is that ordinance is replete talking about the, my tongue will tie on this one, but the neonicotin types of herbicides, and it's really replete with that, but in the last letter that Mr. Woods sent in, it doesn't really address what Mr. Woods had, I don't believe, what Mr. Woods had in that letter. So I think there's some other issues here before we begin to draft an ordinance that we need.
Well, and I think that if we look at that ordinance and applied it the way that Skagway applied it, that's something that really would need to be fleshed out with retailers. It will impact businesses.
Yeah, oh, big time.
They stop, and there's a very elaborate appeal process, and stops retailers from selling the materials, and again, it's a fairly involved process. It asks that, you know, and I've not had a chance to get with Carl yet, it basically says somebody on our staff will have the right chemical licensing to administer this program. I'm not sure, do we have anybody that, I didn't think so. So, yeah.
I've passed that around to a number of people too, and the opinion is that we'd have to hire another person because that requires that requires a lot of expertise, which we don't have on that. So mm-hmm. I think that whole issue needs to be looked at, but questions answered.
Yeah, certainly some concerns, but not completely ironed out yet.
We'll try to get something back to the assembly, some kind of a draft. It's a takeoff on that, and then I'll let you guys tear it up because it's difficult for us to figure out what everybody means. I mean, how far do you want this to go? I guess is kind of the statement.
And I would almost
is pretty aggressive.
Say once we get information from DEC, I would recommend a work session. I think there's going to be a lot of hashing over the implications of things and what we really can and can't do. All right, moving on to ordinances for third and final reading. We have one ordinance, ordinance number 2014-21, an ordinance adjusting the fiscal year 2015 budget for known changes. And we have an amended ordinance that includes items for Department of Justice grant revenue, State of Alaska legislative grant revenue for a columbarium, a state legislative grant for municipal building renovation, including the MRV architects, RAC grant revenue for the Sandy Beach City Creek Trail, and Homeland Security grant revenue and communications tower expense, police tactical gear, harbor security, fireboat, from the General Fund Department of Natural Resources grant, and that's for signage at Greens Camp, Banana Point, and Wilson Creek, PILT payment to City of Kuprinoff, walk-in cooler and freezer combo for elderly housing, as well as a State of Alaska grant for window replacement, and a harbor transfer out to Crane Dock upgrade project. And a fire department full-sized SUV. And so I need an ordinance to, or need a motion.
So move.
Second.
It's been moved by John Haverlick and seconded by Bob Lynn that we approve this ordinance. Are there any, is there any discussion? Hearing none, will the clerk call the roll?
Jay?
Yes.
John?
Yes.
Kurt?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
Bob?
Yes.
Cindy?
Yes. Ordinance 2014-21, an ordinance adjusting the fiscal year 2015 budget for known changes, is approved unanimously. Moving on to new business, we have Resolution 2014-18, a resolution establishing budget policies to provide for sound management of borough funds. A suggested policy has been provided for Assembly consideration. Once finalized and adopted, it will be the document used to assist in the annual budget preparation and ongoing budget administration. And do you want to launch into it?
I can. Jody, I'm going to start. Please jump in and keep me on track. In the past, the borough, through resolution, this goes back to the city days, had a policy on the general fund. And pretty much word for word, that's what you see here. It's been in place for a very long time, and we've managed to it. As we've tried to, you know, bring in the enterprise funds into this and talk about some of the other specialty funds, we've tried to expand this policy to give the Assembly, it's a twofold thing. I mean, it's the Assembly to weigh in and say, how do you want us to put a budget together, is really where it starts. Something that we can easily explain to the public as far as, you know, how do we take things into account, how do we build budgets, and maybe, no offense to the Assembly, maybe the most important aspect, to give the people like that are sitting in the back of the room, the department heads, guidance on how to put the budget together, meaning what is it that the goals of the Assembly and the community want. So Jody and I did some very informal type goals for the enterprise funds kind of the last couple budget years. We made them very complex. We understood them very well. We had a hard time explaining them to anybody else. Tied to depreciation recapture and profit, and it was difficult. How's that? You've heard me speak about this a little bit. We kind of settled on this in the sense of focusing on fund balances. It's easier for people to understand. And doesn't mean it's perfect, and doesn't mean that the Assembly's not going to come up with some better ideas here, but we wanted something to start with, and that would, you know, that we can explain to the public as far as what is the policy. Mm-hmm. How do we know when we do rate increases? How do we know when we've got enough money in an account or not? And there's our shot at it.
So. All right. So before we get into discussion, I need a motion to approve this resolution.
So move.
Second.
Kurt Wallhader moved and John Haverlick seconded to approve Resolution 2014-18, budget policies. Is there any discussion? Yes, Nancy.
I'd like to amend this to remove Section G and just have the tobacco excise tax go into the general fund.
I'd second that.
May I offer a suggestion?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure the right format here. Rather than remove it, staff would really like it, if you want it to go into the general fund, then say the revenues from this you want to go into the general fund. We're trying to make this, as much as we can, a positive document that outlines all of the questions we get from people. So, entirely up to the Assembly. But it would be helpful for us if the body of the Assembly wants it to go to the general fund, then the be reworded to say that.
Okay, I'm with the okay revenue with that. Are you
general
okay?
Fund rather than just eliminating
yeah,
the whole
I'm
section.
Fine with that.
So, okay. If I'm hearing that right, like an amendment to the budget policy that all tobacco tax revenue be placed in the general fund.
Right.
Jody, did I say that properly?
Okay, then I'll make my amendment that.
Sorry.
And a second's fine with that.
All right. And I actually had a thought about that same part of the budget policies for the tobacco tax. A number of the health services, mental health services, fall under nonprofits, and we do have a community services budget policy. And I was going to recommend that we put the tobacco tax into that line item so that potentially it could be used for health services if we so choose to designate it for those.
Well, can't it, if it's in the general fund, be used for anything we designate?
It can.
I think that rather than define any health or social services or nonprofits, I think that we should just put it into the general fund.
Madam Mayor, if I may?
Yes.
I think my two cents, for whatever it's worth, is when we were having this discussion about the excise tax, whenever that was, my memory fails me, is I know for myself, I liked the assembly could have a lot of leeway having, I think Member Strand had mentioned, not earmarking that for any one place in particular to give the discretion of the assembly to allocate it as we see fit. And although I think potentially, whether it be hospital or other social services, may very well be appropriate recipients. Mm-hmm. I would tend to agree with you, Member Strand, that it would be good to leave us that discretion to spend
right.
it as we see fit.
Is there any other discussion? So we need to take a vote on the amendment. So if the clerk can call the roll.
Yes.
And I'm sorry, I should preface that by saying that we are taking the tobacco pack tax and putting it in the general fund is what we're voting on right now.
Nancy?
Yes.
John?
Yes.
Cindy?
No.
Bob?
Yes.
And Jay?
Yes.
And that amendment passes. Now moving back to the main budget policy resolution. Is there any more discussion on that?
Just a question for the manager. John, over the last couple of years, is trying, as we begin into the budget process, has tried to look at either keeping the budget even or reducing it in some way or other. Is your thinking then that this then would negate any type of proposals, say, for instance, like John had in the past?
Question.
Hmm. Actually, it's two answers, yes and no. Obviously, during the budget preparation process, assembly members have the right to say, we want, what's that expense, and we don't want you to spend as much there, and we'd rather it spent elsewhere or not spent at all. The challenge with that is, if we go into a budget process, we're always, no matter how much time we give, John gives the answer he doesn't like, which is we're running out of time. What we were trying to accomplish is to give the department heads direction. So, in the event that the general fund. We're with our fund balances within the 4 to 6 month window that this policy says. We go through the process of putting the budget together. We have a work session. It's everything else is in compliance. We would hope that the assembly has not at that point in time suddenly say, okay, well, we have a new goal, which is we would prefer that the general fund go down or be tied to consumer price index I'm trying to say is that overreaching really large goals when we get to that budget work session stuff is really difficult for us to do, to be nimble enough to get you what you need and still meet all the schedules. So this is a really good time to try to make those determinations. I don't necessarily know how to put those in words. John wants to cut $1 million from the budget. How do we put that in this document? and I'm not sure I have an answer to that. It's, you know, we tried to hit the enterprise funds by saying, you know, a fund balance, you know, if it gets too big, then, you know, we don't do anything. If it gets too small, we're asking department heads to come forward with a plan to get it there, to get it to the in front of the assembly, so you guys can basically say, yeah, good plan, we follow it, and this plan includes cutting expenses and or raising rates or whatever the difference is. I don't know. Jody, you have any words of wisdom on some of the member Lynn's statement? I mean, I don't know how to put a policy in effect that answers that.
Yes, John.
Yes, and thanks, Bob, for bringing that up. Usually I've run into in the last couple of years that when I've asked to cut some things, the response has always been it's too late. So I'm hoping, you know, I this isn't a policy. It's just my concern that we usually spend 98% of our income in our budget, which leaves us 2% for emergencies, capital project, you know, whatever. And to me, that's not sufficient, especially in this climate. We've got falling oil prices. The governor has told us, you know, to put two or three capital projects on the list at the most, and, you know, naturally we put more. And we need to really separate our wants and needs. I guess I'm not good at talking, but my real concern is that we have a lot of needs coming up, you know, not just wants, and we have no monies coming in to pay for those. And the state has been very specific, and it's been coming for quite a while, saying, we're not going to give you anything. And if we do, what are you going to put towards what we give you? And basically saying, if you don't match what we give you, or at least show something like that, close to a match, or at least an effort to come up with your own funds, why should we give you anything? And, you know, that's the climate. It's not handouts anymore. So my real concern is that I would like to see us spend less than we did last year, all around, putting, and I know, and thanks, Jody, for you know, having the patience to write this, that we can't keep so much aside in the general fund, like from more than the 4 to 6 months support. I'd like to see that, you know, it'd be a full 6 months, and I understand with variations in taxes and things like that, that we may go over that so it doesn't look as good. But I'd like to have as much put aside as possible to pay our own way, because I think that's what the climate is. I mean, that's what we ask of families. And especially looking at, you know, what the state's been saying, what the politicians have said coming to town here, and then looking at our last vote, people have said overwhelmingly, we're not going to pay any more taxes. And you've given us these exemptions for different things. We want those. We don't want to all of a sudden pay senior taxes or anything else. So if, like for the police station, which is a need, if we come up with, you know, if the state gives us another 500,000 or a million, we're still far short of what we need. But more than likely, they're going to say, we'll give you a million if you come up with a million. The only way we can get that is through a bond. And people have already said, we're not going to pay taxes. So they're not going to want their property taxes increased. And to be honest with you, for a strong community and for a strong business development, we have to keep a limited tax roll. So that's my concern. And again, this isn't a policy. My sincere hope is that we're putting as much of aside as we can to pay our own way. And if there's any way we can spend less, boy, I sure'd like to see it, because I don't want to see us going to that 98% expenditure of all our income. And to be honest with you, this is, you know, with Steve and the rest of department heads, this is the strongest assembly of department heads and city manager that we've had in the 20 years I've been here. And I really appreciate all your hard work, but I am concerned about tomorrow. And I know when I first came here 20 years ago, the Salvation Army had 30 people on assistance. Now we have over 100. when I was going to buy a house, there was one house on the market, and whatever that person said, that's what you gave them, no matter what the appraisal is. Now there are over 100 homes on the market, and for every home that's on the market, my home's worth less. And that's, you know, that's not a, a great situation to be in for a healthy town.
I can speak to a couple pieces. In the policy, you'll notice that, you know, we put in half of all excess revenue in the general fund would go to the property development fund. But kind of speaking to that, in other words, at the end of the year, if we end up being, having more, you know, being in the black, half of that would be go towards it. And that was kind of the concept of setting that money aside. In addition, in the last 2 years, when we build the budget, we put in a $90,000 contingency. And it's just a line item. You can call that a lot of different things, including a slush fund, I suppose. But the, you know, reality is what it is putting aside for unexpected expenses, so that this stuff comes up during the year that we didn't expect. There's money to already budgeted. And so when nothing happens, that ends up going towards that. In portion of that goes into the property development fund. Again, does not answer the whole question about taxes and everything else. I mean, it is a policy that allows for us to accumulate cash in a way that, that the public can understand, because that's always one of the issues with government, is that we're not really supposed to accumulate large amounts of cash. It becomes a, like I said, the assembly's got to weigh in on this.
Yeah.
How much is enough?
Nancy.
I don't really see these as handouts. I see them as perhaps the state coming up with some of the monies to replace their mandates, their unfunded mandates, like property tax exemption for seniors, that they don't, that they remove from our income stream, yet don't replace with. So this is a way of doing it. And if they maybe looked at how much we lose, that would be a matching fund. Mm-hmm. So it's not like the a handout, it's payment in lieu of taxes, if you will.
When we went through the budget process last year, one of the things I found that I wasn't really happy with is the fact that everything in there was absolutely necessary, but there really wasn't, we really didn't have anything on there that would say what the trade-offs were if you were on each of the, on those, with each of the departments, if you were to reduce it 1% or do something else. It's all essentially taken, and when it comes before us, at least the way I felt when we went through the work session, is it, it's a done deal. You know, you couldn't make any adjustments at that point. And that, I think John's has a point. I don't know how to get at it, though. How do you look at some of those trade-offs? As you're going through that process.
And as I recall the budget process, we actually did make some changes to the budget. But would ask you, John, do you have a specific recommendation for something we could add to this resolution that would address your concern?
Yeah, again, I'm not really good at putting those things together. What I would like to see is like an A and a B scenario where, and I don't know if it fits in the policy thing, this policy statement, or if that's the right place for it. But, we usually just get the one option, and our adjustments are very, our options for adjustment are very minimal. It'd be, and I know this is a real pain to, and may even be inappropriate, put on the department heads and the city manager. But if we had an A budget, which is sort of the wants and needs, and then a B budget that just says, I have to have this to run my department. And the thing is, we are going to, you know, and maybe I'm just a pessimist, we are going to have to cut down on some services. We may not be able to open facilities 7 days a week or 6 days a week even, but that should be part of the B line. So we know if we are going to cut back so we can support our police station or support some of our other needs on our projects list, that, okay, we're going to do that. We're not going to raise taxes, but we may not have facilities open so many hours a day or so many days a week. You know, these are the trade-offs, so the community knows what we're doing rather than just saying, well, we're going to put up a bond for a mill or two or whatever because we need to do this capital project. I'd rather have those monies put aside to be ready for that.
If I may?
Mm-hmm.
What's the goal? You know, tend to
the goal is to pay our own way.
Well, okay. I mean, I'll put you on the spot now.
Okay.
Okay, so if we're going to do that, then I think the quick calculations I did on the harbor would involve the harbor raising rates about 300-400%. Because you can say paying your own way means recapturing 100% of depreciation. I don't think that's what people want. Sure. I mean, you know, I mean, it's somewhere between me being absurd and what we're doing today sounds like it. We need to know the goal from the assembly. Is it you want $10 million in the bank? Is you want $20 million in the bank? I mean, we've got, what, I don't know, more than that. You know, we can put money aside if that's what the goal is, or we can, or if the goal is you just want to, everybody wants to see the budget cut by 10%, then we'll come back to you and tell you, all right, this is what it's going to take to cut it by 10%, and there will be cuts in services, and we'll give you those options. I mean, I'm trying to get a feel for what does the assembly want. If it's, as John said, you want to put money aside, well, what's that magic dollar amount? I mean, how much money is enough?
Can I ask a point of clarification? It ties into this. It's a, I guess I'll put you on the spot, too, if I may, John.
No.
Good answer. It's a point of clarification, if I'm hearing you right, talking about, like, budget A and budget B. I'll use the police station as an example. Like, what that would look like, failing putting a bond out that, as you said, taxpayers said they don't want to pay for, what would budget B look like for us to save enough money to pay for that on our own? Like, scenarios
right.
like that?
Is exactly, that right.
Thanks. Just wanted to clarify what I was hearing.
And again, sorry, through the chair.
No, that's okay.
you know, I've been trying to be pretty clear in our approach using the police station as an example.
Yeah.
We have no intention of going to a bond unless the assembly decides that's what you want to do. You know, Jody and I have got different funding scenarios from that I was asked by the mayor, once we get through this next legislative session, bring that back to the assembly. In other words, if we get money, great, that changes it. If we don't, we're going to come to you with various funding mechanisms for that project that has been labeled number one by the assembly. And so that's basically what we're focused on. And it has nothing to do with going to a bond, again, unless the assembly changes their mind and says they want to go down that road. One of the challenges that we have is we can prepare for the grim future and put a bunch of money aside, and there's a cost to that, and it's pretty substantial. And at what point, where do you draw that line in the sand? And that's kind of where we're trying to figure out is where do you want that line drawn? At what point do we say, you know, no, the harbor, I'm sorry, you need to raise your rates until we have $5 million in the bank? And same with each of the other enterprise funds. I can tell you that if we did that, we'd close Mountain View Manor because they can't accumulate that much cash. It's not possible under the rate structures, you know, the feds put us under. The harbor could raise their rates. My guess is 3/4 of the boats would pull out. And we can go through the rest of the enterprise funds the same way. The general fund, you know, it's one of our, you know, it's property tax and sales tax funded. So you want to make major changes to it. If you want to do it all at once, I mean, we've got some problems. I mean, the general fund is tied up in, you know, utility bills and payroll and, you know, operating costs. So, as John said earlier, mentioned earlier, it's going to involve changing things. You know, we're going to go and you know, the library is going to be open 2 days a week. And you know what? That aquatic center costs us too much. It doesn't pay for itself. What's the community want at that point then? Mm-hmm. I mean, you get into this issue of you know,
a bit of like a line item discussion. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, how does the assembly want to address this? I mean, you know, budget policy document is one of those things that, you know, in my opinion, moves us in the direction of saying, here's what we're doing, community. Is it enough or too much? Beyond that, I mean, we can get as aggressive as this group wants to do, and then it's up to us to try to figure out a way to make it happen.
So, if I'm understanding you correctly, John, you have two concerns. One is that you would like us to spend less budget-wise overall, mm-hmm. but you also would like us to save money back, more money back, in matching funds or emergency funds. Am I hearing that correctly?
Right. So we don't end up 2 years from now or 5 years from now saying, "Whoa, we can't afford what we're doing," and we make this massive cutback. You know, maybe we have to cut something. I guess when I was thinking, say, you know, in this A and B budget, A is the full 100% of what the department's wants and needs are, or, you know, what they think they are. And an option B is 3% less. And then that would be used to take care of, you know, the helping and build the police department or any needs that come up. Like the school cafeteria is a disaster, and you know they thought they were going to get the money last year. And I to take care of things so we don't have it in such a state that we may be sued, or like the police department lose their $300,000 because the jail is woefully inadequate and doesn't meet standards. If we lose that $300,000 next year because of that, and we don't have the monies to build a new jail, That's a heck of a hit that they might have been better off absorbing in the budget so we can start the building.
So if I'm going to ask these gentlemen their questions, mm-hmm. but if you would like to have that added, can you flesh something out that we could include as an item in to be amended to this resolution? Because we have to have it something written
right,
down as a paragraph so that we can approve or disapprove it. So that would be my recommendation to you. Yes, Bob.
My original question is whether or not you could this particular budget document could handle what John's asking for. What I heard Steve saying is this document itself does not, but it doesn't negate or doesn't preclude us from adding something. Is that's what we heard originally? Okay.
Do you have a question, Kurt?
Yeah. Well, and just playing the devil's advocate, being a taxpayer myself. Being a harbor boat owner, the fallout of reducing services when you don't reduce how much I pay. I mean, there's the sticky wicket. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to continue to charge me for the same amount, but I'm going to get less services. I think you're going to get a huge pushback. So that's our dilemma, is to how do we convince people to do with less and pay the same. Mm-hmm. So
I think we found well put. When we... You know, we went to the voters with the borough went to the voters with the sales tax exemption. And I've heard a lot of comments from people in this community about, you know, the borough needs to think ahead. Well, that was an example of the borough thinking ahead. You know, we've talked about the you know, graying of demographics in Southeast.
Right.
We asked the voters, do you want us to think ahead? The answer was no.
So, pretty resounding, no.
We don't want you to think ahead. You can extrapolate that as what the answer was. I hazard a guess, and the people in the back of the room back there, department heads, could probably answer this even better than I can. But, you know, as we've sliced and diced some of these budgets in the last couple of years, we're getting pushback from the community saying, we don't want it. We want those services. I mean, you know, the library's open 6 days a week. I can't tell you the number of requests I've had. Why aren't we open on Sundays? Okay? Ask Donnie about the challenges he has with the schedule. You know, people want more, not less. You know, that's the challenge. I mean, right now, we do not have to do that. we tried to think ahead with the sales tax initiatives and didn't get very far. Just trying to say, I mean, sometimes we could be ahead of change in a way that ends up being counterproductive. I mean, this budget policy is a way to move us somewhat in that direction that we can explain to people, and again, can be modified, you know, today. If you guys want more money in the bank, you know, if you want, the general fund policy says 4 to 6 months, you can change it to a year if you want to change it to a year, and then we'll come back and give you a plan to get there. Same with the enterprise funds. That's kind of, I'm suggesting that maybe within the framework of this document, there's ways for you to get where you're going without it turning into a, you know, creating 2 and 3 different budgets and making it very, very difficult to try to manage. If again, the concept is we want to put more money in the bank, then change it. You guys have the power to say we want more than 6 months in the bank. We want a year, we want 2 years, we want, you know, whatever the number is. Hopefully it's reasonable so we can get there. But anyway.
I just wanted to interject because Jody and I had a conversation about the budget. And did I hear you say that it was sort of a statewide general practice to have 4 to 6 months?
Yeah, you know, it's normally in all of the finance books that I've looked through, the policy is between 2 and 6 months. So we have it a little bit more conservative. And in 2011, the finance committee at the time set the 4 to 6 months because they wanted to be a little bit more conservative because of different factors like the availability of resources and other funds, and we're subsidizing the assisted living fund. If you have too much though and you just let it sit there, the community wonders, well, how come my tax rate hasn't gone down? Why am I paying the same in property taxes? So we have to account to everyone out there that's paying taxes, why are we going to have this balance? And we are at the top of we're between 4 and 6 months, we're at 6 months right now. I feel like we're in really good shape. And there are other funds available to borrow from if we needed to, like, don't cringe, Carl, but the motor pool fund or the economic fund if we really needed to. We haven't been talking about issuing a bond for, like, let's say the police station. I don't think anyone wants to do that. I know I, as a taxpayer, don't want to see a bond on the next ballot. Mm-hmm. So,
yes, John.
The only example I can think of that is, to me, a very realistic one is, say, in this legislative session, we need, what, $4 million more for the police station? Okay, say the state says, okay, we'll give you, the legislature, we'll give you $2 million if you're going to match it right now. And since we're spending 98%+ of our income, we have $90,000 in the slush fund, where do we get the $2 million so we don't lose the $2 million the state is going to give us without going to a bond and without borrowing it?
Jody, I don't have my spreadsheet.
Well, and right now we could take $1.5 million from the general fund and still be between our 4 and 6 months of unrestricted reserves.
And how much do we have in the property development fund?
$600,000.
We just paid our $2 million. Okay. Okay. It's
good to know we have that flexibility.
Right. Because you're the business manager. Looking at, you know, and you're familiar with the way the state's gone and what we're up against on a daily basis, are you 100% comfortable that with the way we're doing the budget that we're covered for, that we don't need to cut back?
Okay, I can kind of answer that. Okay. Petersburg Borough is in very, very good financial straits. I mean, our auditor does a lot of different cities. We look at them and they go, you guys got it nailed. Most cities don't have a motor pool fund. Most cities don't have the kind of resources that we have that the assembly in a pinch could move around. Now, that being said, could something happen at the state or federal level that could change all that Yes, the answer is very clearly. State budget being what it is, you know, if they say we're not going to fund any more capital projects, period. I don't think that's likely, but they could do that. Are we in trouble? Well, not really. The capital projects that are on that list that are what I would call, oh my God, we have to do, are mostly fall in Carl's area. I'll talk about the police station in a second. And they're already pre-funded and with rate increases built into the process. So, you know, do we have a capital project list? What about the school cafeteria? Well, the school is, there's a state grant program called Deferred Maintenance. That project was number 8 on the state last year. It'll move up this year, and that means potentially they would have to wait a little longer. I come from a world where I used to be, where that's how you did stuff. You didn't have 40, 50 projects. You had one, and you might have to wait 4 or 5 years before your chance came up that that project got funded. In the meantime, you make do. Our police station's an example of we've made do a long time, and we're very close to being able to fund that. And without having to go for a bond. Back to John's question, am I comfortable that the way we're spending money will allow us to continue to operate? Yes, as long as something else doesn't change in a big way. What's the likelihood of those things changing? Probably more now than they've ever been for a while. I mean, I have to be honest about that. I mean, the federal budget being what it is and what folks that are in control there want to do with budgets, there's a likelihood that we'll see continued decreasing funding from the feds. The state, we all have seen the stuff on that. You know, that'll change things, and we'll have to adapt. Does that mean that Petersburg suddenly is in trouble? No.
I do.
We could be. I mean, it goes on for 5 years. Yeah, it gets uglier. I talked all around your issue. We're in really, really good shape. Doesn't mean it couldn't change.
Jay, you had a question?
More of a statement, if I may.
Sure.
To boil it down simply, all details aside on this budget policy is really, for this resolution is, it makes sense, and Jody and Steve and everyone else have put effort into this, at least in my mind, I think shooting for the, 4 to 6 months, I like the wording, but the way it is, shooting for 6 months worth of operating expenses is a really sound plan, and I think it kind of ties in, actually, in all fairness, with what Member Haverlick is talking about of being shooting for fiscal responsibility, and I guess long story short, my statement is that I like it and definitely feel very comfortable approving it.
Did either of you have a question?
No, I just comment, though, okay. Is that I think that they've done a very good job putting together this package. And with the questions I'd asked Judy and Steve before, I think they've done a good job with it.
Any other comments? Then we can move along to a vote on Resolution 2014-18, a resolution establishing budget policies to provide for sound management of borough funds as amended with the tobacco tax going to the general fund. Will the clerk call the roll?
Nancy?
Yes.
Kurt?
Yes.
Cindy?
Yes.
Bob?
Yes.
Jay?
Yes.
And John?
Yes.
And that passes unanimously. I'm going to call for a 5-minute break, if we may, before we get into the next item.
You're listening to a live broadcast of the Petersburg Borough Assembly meeting down in the Assembly Chambers. Borough Assembly taking a 5-minute break. We'll return to their agenda here shortly. Taking a look at our updated weather forecast, there's a high wind watch in effect this evening into the overnight hours. Currently 44 degrees here in Petersburg tonight, very windy, lows around 40 degrees with southeast winds to 25 miles per hour and gusts to 40 miles per hour in exposed areas. Near Kaufman Cove and Point Baker tonight, southeast winds 35 miles per hour and possibly gusts up to 60 miles per hour. Winds continuing tomorrow as well with southeast winds at 25 miles per hour, gusting to 40 miles per hour. Decreasing by afternoon tomorrow, 10 to 20 miles per hour. Remaining southeast winds. Tomorrow night, southeast winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. And temperatures tonight, somewhat warm in the low 40s for the low. Tomorrow, the temperatures, highs of 44 and lows of 37. On Wednesday, rain heavy at times, highs of 44, lows around 40. Taking a look at the community calendar. The early voting period for the general election has come and gone. It is now up to voting tomorrow. The polling location here in Petersburg is the community center. It's in the lobby of the community pool. Polls are open tomorrow, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. KFSK will provide election coverage starting at 5 o'clock. We'll have local coverage starting at 9 p.m., 1 hour after the local polls close here in the state of Alaska. Thanksgiving gift boxes are available to qualified families through the Salvation Army. Today is the deadline to sign up, and you must sign up in person at the Salvation Army Hall. The hall is located at the corner of 2nd and Fram. The Christmas box registration is also underway for families in need, and you can do so also at the Salvation Army to register there as well. And that deadline for the Christmas baskets is a couple weeks away. Also, regarding the Salvation Army, if you're interested in helping out in the Red Kettle bell ringing campaign this year, contact Lieutenant John at the Salvation Army. The phone number is 4586. The bell ringing begins the day after Thanksgiving on Friday, November 28th. If you can spare some time, it certainly helps out. KFSK is offering the Gardens of London tour in May 2015, including a tour of the Chelsea Garden Show on opening day. The tour will be led in London by In the Gardens, Ed Byarski. There are two webinars scheduled for interested travelers to find out more about the trip. One is today at 5:15. Another is this Thursday at 12 noon. RSVP with Mindy if you can make it. You can also watch on your own computer at your own location if you'd like. Get information by calling Mindy at 772-3808. AA meetings tonight. There's a men's meeting for Alcoholics Anonymous, 7 o'clock at the Lutheran Church. The women's meeting is tonight at 7 o'clock at the Presbyterian Church. Information 518-0061. We're going to get right back to the Borough Assembly meeting here in a moment. Just a reminder that the Borough is accepting some input regarding the recycling program. And you can submit your comments online at the Petersburg Borough website. That's petersburgak.org. And the deadline is Friday, November 14th. So that's a week from this Friday.
Thank you.
I want to clarify that borough website address. That address is petersburgak.gov. That's P-E-T-E-R-S-B-U-R-G. That's Petersburg. A-K.G-O-V.
And 5 proposals were received. The department is recommending that a contract be awarded to Millard and Associates of Ketchikan in the not-to-exceed amount of $52,531. Funds for the project are budgeted in line item 410-000-501-410. Do I have a motion to approve that award?
So moved.
Second.
Bob Lynn moved and John Haverlick seconded that we approve this award for professional services. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, I'm sorry.
Hey, I just had a question for Joe. Do you have any ballpark of what you think the renovations may cost?
I don't. That's why I asked for a fixed price or not to exceed value, because normally architectural services are based on a percentage of the job, and I didn't want anybody padding that.
Right.
We just need to take a realistic look at resolving some code issues and see if we can make the building a little more energy efficient. And in the process, if we can also do something with that corner that makes it where we can see around the corner, turning left, that would be helpful also. So this is kind of just taking a hard look and telling us what we can do and what we can't do. For instance, can we 45 the corner of that building structurally? The other thing, or can we establish a lobby area downstairs as part of the entry where handicapped folk can come in there, and then rather than elevate them upstairs, we can simply have come down and meet them downstairs. You can be ADA compliant by doing that. So just to take a look at these things. And then we're installing this new heat pump, trying to get energy efficient with our heating system, but the building's uninsulated. So at the same time, if we're going to modify the outside of the building, it just makes sense to go ahead and do an exterior insulation and siding system.
I know this is probably a stupid idea, but I'm on a roll today of stupid ideas. So would it make any sense for you to sort of take that money and the renovating money and move into here and to help get this project moving faster?
Because that building's
in awful shape.
We're just doing the upstairs, and actually, as old as that building is structurally, it's in better shape than this one.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
You have one more idea, John, and then we're cutting
you off. Oh, no, I'm done for the year.
No, that's okay. Is there any more discussion? Go ahead, Nancy.
I think it might help for the traffic at that corner to just make it an all-way stop or make it one way up the hill.
Yeah.
It was discussed. We're welcome to talk about it again. Evidently, the community was not really fond of that idea. But it was one of the topics we threw around a little bit would be to go to at least a three-way stop. It's already a one-way. Have people coming, heading north, make them stop, and come in the other way. But it did not go over well with folks we talked to.
Any other discussion? Will the clerk call the roll?
Kurt.
Yes.
Nancy.
Yes.
Bob.
Yes.
Cindy.
Yes.
Jay.
Yes. Yes.
And 14-333, the award of professional services contract for architectural engineering of the Electric Department Building Headquarters upgrade is unanimously approved. Moving on to communications. Have there been any communications to report? The only thing that I can report, I had a contact from somebody today who was having trouble navigating the trail between Hammer and Wecon and the post office and we're trying to determine who actually owns that property, who had some, who helped put some surfacing down on that trail, and who actually has responsibility for it. So if the caller is listening, we're looking into it, but it may not be an easily, immediately solvable issue. There's apparently a big water hole in the middle of the trail that's making it difficult to pass for folks of limited mobility, and they would like access between that because it's the closest route between Mountain View Manor and the post office. So we'll keep looking into that and see what we can do. The next item on the agenda is assembly discussion items, and item 16A is recognitions. Are there any recognitions?
Yes. And this is an idea, it's an actual recognition.
Then you go ahead.
Thanks, yeah. I'd just like to thank Carl's crew for making so my toilet flushes the right way. And, you know, it's really appreciate it. And I know they had to do a lot of work on those pump stations, and they got her. Thank you. And then wanted to thank Glow for saving two boats this last couple weeks.
Yes, yes. Anyone else?
I just have to say this because it's just perfect timing. We just finished talking about cutting budgets and, you know, saving boats and fixing sewer systems and looking into improving trails. This is what I was trying to talk about a little bit, is this community really likes a certain level of services, and that's what makes it really tough when we start talking about budgetary stuff. These folks really want those kind of services. They want, you know, Donnie or somebody to take ownership of that trail system and make sure it's compatible. And that's an expensive proposition. So, anyway.
Thank you. Any other recognitions? The next item on the agenda is 14-290, Alaska Mental Health Trust Land Office Letter from September 17th, 2014, and that's regarding the Papke's Landing parcels. I don't believe we have any additional information, but this is a matter that will remain on the meeting agenda until action is taken by the Assembly and folks are advised to see the October 6th meeting agenda for the full content of that discussion. But it refers to the properties that Mental Health has for sale at Papke's Landing.
Madam Mayor, may I speak to that?
Yes.
Someone correct me if I'm wrong on this. The lots that are right above the Papke's parking lot, that's 5, 6, and 7? Does anybody know?
That's correct.
I think I'd like to put it out there, and not in any motion at this point, but I think we should consider that as something that would be really viable for our community, not talking about now, but down the line. That's a valuable property. And the cost of it is definitely significant. Thinking long term, though, in terms of harbor development, I really could see those being a great resource for our community and for the harbor system. So chew on it for the time being, but I'll probably be bringing this up again. I think it could be a real good asset to us in the long run. That's all.
All right, thank you. And moving on to item C, 14-318, borough services and or borough service areas. From now through December 15th, the Assembly will set aside this time to address borough services and or borough service areas. Residents are encouraged to submit questions, concerns, comments, and opinions regarding services and service areas in relationship to borough charter requirements. And we will also be checking in with our attorney on some of the discussion.
Referencing that matrix, if I can get some buy-in from the Assembly.
Sarah Heidemann, please.
Yes, Hunt.
Petersburg.
Hold on. I'm sorry, you said Kathy, right?
Yes.
We're just trying to get the phone situated. Thanks. So as Steve said, we want to get buy-in on this matrix of services that are provided within Service Area 1 and outside of Service Area 1. Part of the reason that we have Sarah. That's all right.
Sarah?
Hi, Sarah. Okay.
Part of the reason that we asked Sarah to be on the phone is we've had a discussion about fire and police response outside of service area one. And if you look at the borough charter, which I do not have in front of me, there is an item at the towards the end of the charter after all of the exclusions for services that will not be provided outside of service area one. It does say we will provide emergency service dispatch. And I asked the question, why would we do that if we weren't also going to provide fire and police service outside of service area one? So Sarah can provide a better clarification than certainly I can to that discussion. So I'll turn it over to you, Sarah.
Thank you. Yes, I don't know if anyone there has their charter in front of them, but what we're looking at in the charter is Article 14. And it discusses service areas and also area-wide and other non-area-wide powers. And in short, I think the language you're referring to is in Section 1406, and it talks about area-wide powers, and it indicates that the borough has the area-wide power to provide 911 emergency dispatch services. And that is differentiated in the charter from police departments and fire and emergency medical services. In Section 1402 of the charter, it indicates that it lists some 8 items that are only going to be provided by service area, and that includes police departments, fire departments, and also emergency medical services. So what Section 1406 area-wide powers refers to when it references the 911 emergency dispatch services is that on an area-wide basis, the borough will provide a 911 communication system at a public safety answering point, which means they will answer and dispatch calls, but it may be dispatched by a different agency other than the Petersburg Borough Public Safety Department. The 1402 that talks about the service area specifically provides that the police department and medical services and fire department are only going to be provided on a service area basis. And if one were to look at 1406 to say, well, it does talk about emergency dispatch services, there is a provision in 1402, subsection E, that says that specifically no area-wide power shall be interpreted to include any of the powers described in 1402A, which includes the prohibition of the fire, emergency, and police department only on a service area basis. So how we have interpreted this is basically the drafters of the charter wanted to ensure that folks outside of the then existing city's service area one didn't receive and get taxed for services that they didn't want or didn't need, that the residents would decide that after borough formation. So so any changes that occurred outside of service area one in regards to services that were going to be provided would be decided by the residents themselves, as creation of a service area can only be done by a majority vote. And that same distinction between 911 dispatch services and more detailed EMS, police, and fire services was also made in the petition itself. So what the petition says basically is we're going to continue to provide what is provided at the time of borough formation in regards to fire, police, emergency services, but that any changes post-borough formation are going to be done by a service area.
All right.
Does that make sense?
It makes sense to me. Are there any questions?
Sarah, it's Bob Lynn. I've got a question for you. So in your opinion, from reading this and your interpretation, would that require, in order to provide those without forming a different service area, would that require a change in the charter?
You mean if we wanted to provide, if the borough wanted to provide, say, an EMS department outside of service area one by some means other than a service area?
That's correct. Let's say that we've decided or we wanted to provide let's say ambulance services to Papke's Landing or out the road, doesn't matter. Would that require a change in the charter without forming a service area outside of service area one.
Yes, I think if the intent was to, say, provide, establish like a medical services department down the highway or on Kuprinoff instead of on Mitkoff, and you didn't want to do it by service area, I think you would have to change the charter. You would still have the service area statutes to address, but yes, currently the only way to do this in the borough is by service area.
Yeah. Again, Bob Lynn, I don't think it'll ever happen, at least not in my lifetime, that you're going to have a separate ambulance or service out there because there's not enough people. So then the question was, I guess I was relating to you, is what happens if we decide that we want to provide, let service area one provide it outside? Do we still have to set up a different service area to do that?
In order to set up an emergency services department, say on Kuprinoff,
I think he's asking about expansion of services, not new services.
Okay. Well, the charter does address an expansion of service area one, if that's what you're referring to. So 1403 contemplates that if the service area boundaries are going to be expanded, it can be done by assembly ordinance, but it also has to be voted on both by the people in the existing service area. It would have to pass by a majority of those voting in the existing service area, as well as a majority of the voters residing in the area that would be added to the service area.
Sarah, this is Steve.
Go ahead.
And Bob, I'm asking a question on your behalf, sort of. If the Petersburg Police Department was asked to three trips a day to the end of the road system and back and drive through Papke's while they did it, in other words, basically a patrol, is that something that would be contrary to the existing charter, or is that something the assembly could weigh in on?
That's good.
Well, is that something that's done now, or is that an expansion of services?
That would be an expansion of services. Today, we only go outside there as if we are basically asked to by Forest Service law enforcement, the troopers, or, basically what happens. An event occurs, we go to dispatch the trooper, and Juno tells us trooper's not home. And at that point in time, they ask us to back them up and go respond. So actually making regular patrols is not something we currently do or did before. It would be in addition to what we did, it'd be an expansion.
Okay. Yeah. I think that the both the petition and the charter contemplated that the provision of either police, fire, or EMS at a level beyond that which existed at the time of borough formation would be done only on a service area basis.
Again, Sarah, Bob Lynn, but if that service was provided prior to, it's not in my mind, it's not an expansion, it's a continuation of what was there.
Yeah, I think what the petition contemplated is that whatever services were being provided at the time of borough formation would continue to be provided, but that changes would be made thereafter in regards to police, fire, and EMS on a service area basis, that folks could decide if they wanted to be taxed for those additional services. So yes, the first question is whether they were provided already. If they were provided at the time of borough formation, then the petition contemplates that those would continue at the same level. If they were going to be expanded, or if a new service was going to be provided, it would only be done by service area.
Yeah, go ahead, Kurt.
Madam Mayor, this is for Sandy. Sandy, you guys have already indicated that you've been going out there with fire and EMS. Was that something that was in your guys' policy, or is that something you just did as good Samaritans?
It was a courtesy. courtesy thing that it's, since I've been part of the department, it's something we've always done. We were never mandated to do it. We have always said mandate is to protect the city, previous city of Petersburg. So that's where we're located. That's where the tax base is. We guarantee that. Anything outside of the old city limits, now service area one, is a courtesy response. For fire, EMS, we typically go where we're called because we charge for that. So it's the same fee whether we're in town or out of town. And the volunteers want to go, and we always have that discussion. And currently, so we'll use the hatchery fire as an example, and I know there was lots of discussion regarding that. It happened in the middle of the night, in the middle of winter. It's very cold. It's 18 miles out the road. Volunteers want to go. And then we have to stop and think, are we going to deplete the community, service area one, our tax base, and deplete them of resources to go respond to something outside of service area one to a non-tax base to fight a fire? We all want to go, but we understand that we have to protect our community first. So as a courtesy thing, we sent a crew and did not deplete Petersburg so we could still protect service area one. So that's how we look at it when we're responding, especially with fire. The ambulance service, basically the on-call crew goes, and then we have a backup crew that'll protect Petersburg itself. But again, that's fee for service.
Yes, go ahead.
A follow-up question for Sandy. Yeah, I appreciate everything that you guys have done for this community, and just wanted to applaud you for that. But my question is, do you feel like right now we are staffed well enough that you could continue to provide adequate service out that way if this is going to be an expansion? Or do you think that other things need to occur, like maybe they have their own little station out there and their own volunteers? Mm. I mean, that's, I know we're going to have this discussion at some point. So.
Yes, and then that's what I discussed with Steve as well, is if it's going to be mandated that we have to respond, then we're going to run into an issue because it's a volunteer organization. We only have two paid people. And so you run into the issue of during the summer or travel season and holidays and people are gone and not available. Most of the time we can't fill a truck. So if we're going to mandate that we have to go out the road and it's required response where there's no question, you know, how many people do we leave in town? It's just basically we get a call, we send everything we have. And if that's the decision that the assembly wants to go, then we will have to sit and evaluate what our needs are. Does that make sense?
Clearly. Yeah, thank okay. you. Yeah, I know this is going to be a sticky wicket
yeah.
issue.
Yeah.
And Sandy, are you speaking both to fire and EMS or just fire when you say that that's going to be?
Just fire, because EMS, again, if we get a call, somebody's having an issue at Papke's Landing, we jump in the ambulance and we go, okay. regardless of where the location is, because then we have the backup crew. EMS only takes two or three people. Fire takes 6 to 20.
So for Sarah and for Sandy, whoever has the best answer to the question, if we said we were going to expand services outside of service area one, how, and maybe it doesn't, does it affect the borough's liability in any way?
I'm going to say probably.
Well, this is Sarah here. Mm-hmm. I don't think it would. The borough generally will have immunity for those kinds of services. So no, I don't think it would affect the borough's liability.
Okay. Go ahead,
and
Sandy.
I would just add on with any emergency services, obviously, time is of the essence. So the longer it takes you to get there, the more difficult it is.
Right.
It would be very difficult to staff a station. You'd have to pay people, I'm guessing, because if you think about the people outside, either are out fishing or they work in town, so they're not stationed out there. So response times, if we respond outside current service area one, typically we're going to save an out structure or their neighbors, because by the time we can respond, you know, fire travels pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Bob, I think, had a question.
Yeah, I was just going to make a point on what Kurt was talking about. During the boundary review board was here, there was a table presented, and I think it had 58 examples of responses that were made outside of town to Papke's Landing and around for requests and so forth. And to me, that wouldn't be an extension of service. That would be something that was already provided, you know, prior to borough formation. Just a point.
So a question for Sarah, follow-up, where we're headed here. Sarah, if they decided in that, in the Papke's area, that they wanted to become a serious area too, shall we say, and so that they can put a fire station out there. Is that the best direction for them to go, or do you think they should continue just to try to expand the service area? I don't know if I was really clear on that, but.
Yeah, there certainly is two options, which is either expansion or creation of a new service area. It would really depend which option would be better for them, would really depend on what kind of services they want. If they're just talking about limited to fire and EMS, then it might be that just a creation of a new small service area down that way would be the way to go. Generally, you don't want to have two service areas right next to each other that provide the same services. So if the service can be provided by an existing service area, then you're going to just want to expand the service area. So it really is going to depend on what they want by way of additional services or an increased level of service.
And so, just to be clear, and this is for you, Sarah, the fact that fire has done courtesy calls outside of service area one, does that establish a precedent, or are we looking at expansion of services?
Well, I would agree with basically what Sandy said earlier, which is at the time of borough formation, it was contemplated the service level would stay the same and I think when folks call 911 and they have a fire, they have a medical emergency, the folks in service area one do the best they can to respond to it, regardless of whether it's inside or outside of service area one. But in making that decision, they have to decide what's available, whether it's safe for them to go, or if they're going to have to get on the boat and go. It's a different level of service. And one where the needs of service area one are predominant. And so what was being basically provided at the time of borough formation was response when response was safe and available. And if they want something more, what Steve was referring to earlier is, you know, a substation down there so response can be done quicker that will be separately manned, or patrol three times a day, things that were not provided at the time that the city was providing that services, then I would think a service area would be the way to go.
Yes, Kurt.
Another question for you, Sarah, about service area. What's the ramifications of everything outside of service area one now becoming service area two? And what sort of governing control then would they have if they did that, or would that, what would that look like?
What would a service area two look like?
Yes.
The assembly would the cost of establishing and running that service area two would be kept. The assembly would then levy the taxes necessary to pay for costs for that service area. Any funds that were raised shouldn't be used for any purpose other than to pay the cost of that service area. The assembly can either supervise the services or can basically have a board appointed or elected to supervise that service area, so there could be a service area two board established to provide those services, either elected or appoint a board, or the assembly can do that themselves. Did I answer your question? I think there was a first part of it I didn't hear very well, but I think I got the second part.
Yeah, I think you did, because I was asking you what the ramifications are, and I think you covered that with an elected board or an appointed board to make decisions for service area two versus us making those decisions for them. So anyway, I was just trying to get some clarity here so that if people decided that that's the direction they wanted to go, they'd have maybe some idea of what it looked like when it was finished. So,
and I guess I'm confused by a board for a second service area if we didn't have one for service area one. We start getting multiple layers of government that I'm not sure are going to serve us well.
Agreed, yeah. Added layers of bureaucracy, to put it simply, is what I'm hearing.
True, but that's how the charter is written.
Okay.
1405B is what she's
referring to. The charter gives you the option.
Yeah, but you don't have to.
You don't have to do it. Right.
Correct. So would that be, in a sense, Sarah, this is Kurt here again, would that, in a sense, sort of be like an advisory board in the direction that the community wants to go in, so they just have a handful of spokesmen there that are... Or, you know, they only have one spokesman that comes for the assembly or say what they're going to look like.
The charter doesn't clarify whether it's simply an advisory board or whether they are more than that. It does state in that section, though, that if there is a board, that the board will determine the costs and levels of services. So it appears that it's more than simply an advisory board, but the assembly is the body that's going to levy the taxes in any event.
Well, and I do like that we gave ourselves the out of an appointed or an elected board. It wouldn't necessarily have to be an elected board.
Well, and it clearly says may, meaning the assembly could choose to keep those powers
right.
to yourself.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But it's...
Are there... Yeah, go ahead, John.
Just thinking about people outside service area one, what do you to say to them on services in for, like, police, fire, ambulance, we're saying that if we can send someone out there and still protect service area one, we will. So are we telling people like in Kuprinoff, Lincoln, L. Duncan, et cetera, that for police, fire, et cetera, the services are maybe?
Steve, for Sarah's benefit.
Mm-hmm.
The answer is maybe on fire, meaning do we have enough folks to respond? It is yes on ambulance if it's safe, so back to maybe. For example, we're not going to dispatch the boat if it's really, really bad weather. That's the current way. Am I correct, Sandy,
yes.
saying that properly?
Yes.
On police, we get into all sorts of... Basically, what happens now when a 911 call goes into the dispatch center, if it's outside of service area one, we're going to dispatch the trooper. Or Forest Service, by the way, because we also do dispatching for the Forest Service law enforcement. If they are unavailable, meaning they're off the island, they're traveling, they're whatever, often we will be asked to, is there something we can do? And at that point in time, we'll go. Now, I say that carefully. There's a very long delay, meaning if we've only got one officer on duty, we call out and ask for another officer to come in to work to be there so then we can release the other officer.
Right.
And if it turns into a big major deal, then we're basically almost like placeholders. We show up, as Member Wolheater mentioned at the last meeting, we become... secure the scene, wait for the trooper. Again, unless we're asked by them to do an investigation or Forest Service, we tend to just basically kind of maintain the scene and wait. We've done accident response for the Forest Service on, fairly, I'd say routine basis, but, they call somebody's had an accident on Three Lakes and, Sandy's group goes and, if asked, we'll send a police officer. Tend to not do much investigation, but occasionally we'll be asked, while you're there, can you take pictures and do that. We've written tickets coming back from a site. We're asked to go out, we're done, we're driving back on the road, somebody goes spinning by at 85 miles an hour, our officers, with their discretion, can pull someone over, and state law allows them to be able to do that. But it's, we are not routinely patrolling, and we're not going out there unless we are basically asked, and the asking is generally coming from Forest Service. Sandy, do you know if NOAA? I don't think they've ever asked us to go.
I don't
do
believe
anything.
So.
I think it's Forest.
Coast Guard.
Yes. Guard has. Yeah, proud about. Thank you, love.
Could I just add one thing?
Sure.
Yeah, I think that I would also add that I think these provisions were included in the charter for the benefit of the folks that were living outside service area one. I think there was a fear at that time that once the borough was formed, the mill rate outside service area one would be increased to provide services that folks didn't want to pay for. And so it was strong service area provisions were included to make it clear that the residents themselves were going to be the parties making those decisions. So to the extent that they wanted services beyond or different than what was provided back when the borough was formed, that would be largely within their control.
So Sarah, Kurt here again. So then if the people in outside of service area one, if they wanted to see more reliable police service, or if they wanted to see more reliable fire service, would they have to form a service area in which to open the discussion amongst themselves there to be able to determine whether or not they were willing to pay for that?
Well, I think it's sort of part and parcel of the same thing. If the residents get together and decide that they do want more reliable fire departments, so let's say they want a fire EMS department out, outside the current area of boundaries of service area one, then that would all be part of the discussion that would occur prior to formation of the service area. So if folks got together and decided that's what they wanted, then that would the result of that would be an ordinance that the assembly would pass. It's the first step. The second step is an election of voting on it. So it's, you don't have to create a service area and then have the discussion. I think that it contemplates you're going to have the discussion and of understanding what services are going to be provided prior to the election.
Sarah, this is Steve. I'm assuming then at that before the election piece, the borough assembly would then also set the cost factor?
Yeah, I think that it will, the cost factors are going to, of course, change from year to year. And so, and the mill rate would presumably depend upon the services that are provided and the cost of those services. But yeah, I think the general cost parameters would be part of that discussion before the election.
So the changes that we're talking about for folks who are listening and don't have this matrix in front of them is for the area outside of service area one, the things that we're proposing that will be additions to since we've formed a borough as services for those folks living outside of service area one are that property information would be provided, some snow removal would be provided, and that posting of notices would be provided. And those are pretty much the changes. Those are the only things I see on this list that are being suggested as...
Well, and these are not even suggested. These are...
happening.
Let me back up. The way I put this matrix together was I started writing things down. I sent it out to all of the department heads several times and said, what am I missing? They provided this data, said, so taking, fire response on the Mitkoff Island Road system outside of service area one, prior to borough formation, were we providing ambulance response? Yes. Are we doing it now? Yes. Mm-hmm. It's a fee service. Mm-hmm. So this data in this matrix is actually what we're already doing, mm-hmm. not a proposal to change. This is what department heads are telling me we are already doing.
I'm just trying to clarify what those changes are post-borough formation.
Yeah. So
it's just those three things, really.
Yeah, and then that's what I'm asking kind of the assembly is number one, is this document up to snuff? And two, do you want it publicized and part of the conversation or not?
Yeah. I'd ask Steve that we put that up on the web so that everybody in the borough can see it, and then also provide response in there so that other people can see people's comments of what they have to say is, yeah, I agree, or no, I don't agree, or, no, you provided this before, but I don't see it on here type of thing. But let it there for a period of time. There's a number of people out there. First, can't come in here. Second of all, to sit in front of this group here, they wouldn't do it to begin with. And I think that, frankly, people need to see it, to see what the thinking is.
Like I said, I mean, I just need some guidance on do you want this matrix published? The commentary piece, I'm not exactly sure we can swing that where everybody can see each other's comments. Our website's not really set up like Facebook or something. But at this point, I could guarantee we could post this on the website, and I can say, you know, if people have written comments they want to submit to us, please do.
Perfect.
But as far as the two-way comments on Facebook, I'm not sure I can set that up.
I think also I would add on the matrix for the off-the-road system under ambulance response, I think that is limited, like the fire response, and that might want to be clarified.
Okay.
So I got the impression you were looking for a vote, but this isn't really done as a resolution. Just a general consensus? Yeah.
Madam Mayor, I would like for everybody's benefit that you need to know, too, is when you're getting to look at service areas, like ambulance, or let's say fire or police, let's say fire, it might not be all outside of service area one or service area two. Mm-hmm. It could be like three or four to five different fire districts around there. So people shouldn't be limited to think, well, there's service area one and only service area two. That's not the case. Neighborhoods can establish themselves. So you could have a lot of fire districts. You could have a dog pound district or something, you know, just so you know, you don't get stuck on there's just service area one and two. It can be mixed up however neighborhoods want their services.
And to build on that, neighborhoods would need to get together
and
form their service area. The assembly is not going to do that. That would come from the residents of an area that desired additional services.
So what I'm hearing was with the Sarah had a really good change on the off the road. On the fire for limited, I'll make those changes. I'll arrange to have this posted on the website. Am I hearing anybody having a? Okay, we'll make that happen.
Get her done.
Okay.
Madam Mayor, there's a body of them with it.
Yes.
That's
right. You did want to speak. Please come up.
Yes. Thank you. I'm Dave Kensinger. I'm a resident of Service Area 1, Service Area 2, and Service Area way out there. thank you very much. This matrix answered my questions, at least, as a member of multiple potential new service areas. I had a lot of questions about exactly what was being provided and not provided, and I want to thank you very much for this, and I think this would be very helpful for everybody out there to see. I don't know if the attorney's still on the line, but my understanding of the charter is that in service area one, there is nothing in the charter that prevents you from providing additional services to other service areas. So I think there's even a section in the charter, I don't have it in front of me. It's saying that you do not reserve, it says you can basically do and provide services in any of the other service areas if you so choose. So I don't think there's anything preventing you from expanding services if you so choose without the creation of additional service areas. And I just think it doesn't make any sense with the low population area, the low numbers of people that live out the road right now, to even contemplate, and I don't think anybody does contemplate, putting up an additional fire station or having another ambulance, having another fire truck out the road. Although everybody would like to have something like that, it's not practical, and I don't think it'll happen in the foreseeable future. But it also makes sense that you guys keep on doing what you've been doing for the last at least 30 plus years that I've lived in the community. When there's been an incident outside of the boundaries of Petersburg, you've responded. And indeed, that was one of my main reasons for signing the petition for the formation of the borough and then supporting it. Because I saw that consistently over a 3-decade period of time that you had responded when there were fires out the road, that you had responded when people had accidents out the road, you responded when people have been brought in impaired, dead, any number of ways into PAPIS with an EMS, and have done so quite readily. And, you know, I think it's a good testimony to the volunteers in the community and to the residents of the people of Petersburg, which a lot of us, even though we might not have lived in the corporate limits of the city of Petersburg, consider ourselves part of. And so that's why I appreciate this document. All right. Thank you.
One clarification. Sarah, are you still there?
I am. Yeah, if I could.
Yeah, I was going to say you might want to weigh in, because I think 1402 does put some limits on what Dave just said.
Well, yeah, and I think in what we're looking at is 1405C. And what that makes clear is exactly what the gentleman was saying, which is that you can use service area equipment and personnel for areas beyond the boundaries of the service area, you know, for purposes of mutual aid and emergency services. I think that is exactly what the borough has been doing so far, is that if someone calls for an emergency, a medical emergency or a fire, the service area 1 assets respond to that. And I think that that is perfectly okay under this provision, and that's exactly what you guys have been doing so far. So I think what we're talking about, though, at this point, as I understand it, is something different, a higher level of service than that.
And I might add that the very last sentence there says, reasonable compensation may be in the form of services, money, future obligations, or other forms determined by the Assembly. So don't think that if we're not going to, with all the discussions that we've been having here, you know, expand service areas without probably having to increase rates of some form or another to be able to give you guys what you want out there. I mean, and that's not a threat. I'm just simply saying that it would be really hard for us to send a policeman out there if we don't have the proper size of police force. We may have to hire 1 more policeman, which may mean compensation of some form or another, you know, to be able to do that then. So I'm just throwing it out there just for discussion.
Oh, I agree, but I would like to also point out that, and if you also look at your budget here, essentially 1/3 of your cost comes from the grants from either the federal government, the state government. So you have a 20 mil property tax rate, which could also essentially mean, which the way, if I understand your budget correctly right now, half of that is property tax and the other half is sales tax. So right now, as a resident actually living in outside of service area 1, I'm paying all of that except for the full property tax rate. And my first property tax bill that I got has 4 mils and it's lined item, and I don't know, maybe you might want to think about correcting that in the future, but that was for general services. Now, my property tax rate that I received for my property that I own in service area 1 had 4.53% for general services. So you might want to figure that out a little bit. So the only difference that I'm paying in general services outside of service area 1 is 0.53 mil. So there's some discrepancies there, and you might want to fix that. So what I'm saying is that yes, as living in service area outside of service area 1, I understand, believe me, I really understand how far it is from here out to my house and how long it takes me to get from here out to PAPIS. Trust me, I've done that many times. And I understand that if I have a fire out there, if I don't put it out with a fire extinguisher in 5 minutes, that structure is going to be gone. But now if I'm out there at PAPIS and I'm having a heart attack, yes, I understand. It's not like, you know, I'd be much better if I was in downtown Seattle and not in Petersburg, if you really get right down to it. Because the response time is going to be less. It's going to take longer. And I don't think most of the people out there, and I could be wrong, but I don't think most of the people out there expect any more than what we've been receiving in the past. And I don't think we're expecting the city to hire additional police officers, to have more paid staff to provide these services. That could change in time, because there is quite a bit of private property out there. And that is one of the big assets that this community has that other communities in Southeast do not have, is that we do have private property that's buildable, accessible. If you go anywhere else in Southeast Alaska, you go to Sitka, you go to Juneau, you go to Ketchikan, all those towns are hemmed in. There's absolutely no place for them to expand. There's no place for people to buy a lot. There's no places for people to expand their businesses unless they want to spend a lot of money. So who knows what will happen in the future out there. But I'd say for right now, the status quo is quite adequate. You know, and I hope, I just wanted to clarify. I just want to know, when I call 911 and I'm sitting out of Pappy's, are you guys going to send an ambulance? That's about it.
No, and I appreciate you bringing this up for discussion because I think the clarification looks good for everybody.
Yep.
Yes.
Can I add to what Dave said? Is that I'm hearing the same thing from residents outside that they don't want any other service. They just want what was provided before to continue at this point. The second point is that I've been involved with two rescues out there since I've been out there in 15 years. And both times, the EMS has responded. I have to say that one of them involved somebody here in town. The other time, it involved somebody out, you know, outside of Alaska. But we're talking not just people outside of Service Area 1. We're also protecting people inside Service Area 1 at the same time, I believe. So we're really doing two things here, I believe.
Yes.
I think it's just common sense. I think unless you want to put a sign up at what used to be the old city limits to say, you enter this territory at your own risk, and, you know, I might add the school bus goes out there. You know, I don't think anybody expects that. And I don't think anybody that was involved in the charter or forming the borough expected that all of a sudden, once we were a borough and once we were paying property tax, so you weren't going to provide services that were provided in years past. I think it's just a clarification. And I think this matrix, at least in my mind, this is great. I really appreciate it. I think that'll solve 90% of the issues that people have.
Well stated.
A quick follow-up for you, Dave, so I don't get misquoted in the newspaper. I just wanted to say that I appreciate you bringing the views of the people out there, for sure, you know, and I was not, and I did not threaten to, you know, to make sure that we made sure that you guys paid more taxes for what you're already getting. I was just saying, no, outside of if you did want the expansion, you know, that was just the next logical thing, is that it was just going to, everybody was just going to have to dip into their pocket. So anyway, so I just didn't want to come off with sounding like, you know, that I want to tax people out there, because that's not what I want to do. I want people to live, you know, out there and have the services that they want and just understand what the rules are. That's all.
All right. Thank you. So are we at a place where we're comfortable with this matrix?
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
You will post it on the borough website? All right. That is the last item on our agenda.
I would move to adjourn.
Oh, wait a minute. Whoa, I asked for item to be added.
Hold on. I'm sorry.
Sorry, Member Lynn.
Go ahead.
Are you ready?
Yes.
And now you're out of turn, so you can't say it.
And Steve has provided me an outstanding opening since we are in good shape financially. I want to start there. You know, several meetings ago, we put together our community priority capital budget, the list. We want to provide to the legislature. We have on there, what, about 12 or 13 projects. One of the things that we've all heard now is that the governor and our legislators have told us that we're not going to get very many funded. And second of all, that it would really help if we were willing to add funds to some of these projects. If you'll take a look at our list, some of our projects, like the municipal building complex, has a sizable fund there. But there's several projects on there that I would like to propose that we develop a resolution. And I have a couple projects in mind, but I'm totally open-minded to changes, et cetera. But I'll give you my idea, at least up front, is that the Petersburg, the school district, has shown us pictures and has made a presentation that they really need to upgrade their food services, kitchens, and so forth. And I was thinking back, is that I think the last time the biggest upgrade was done was when my daughter was in high school here, or my son here. And so that's been quite a while ago. Anyhow, I would propose that we add money to that. And what? Let me just throw you out my ideas, and then we.
Thanks.
Oops.
I just.
Quiet as a church mouse.
She's getting paid.
I was going to say.
Yeah, we're arranging up.
Well, there went your money.
So maybe we need to get back to that adjourned thing. No, go ahead, Bob.
All right. What I would, what I'd propose is that we add funds to three different projects, and I'll get into some detail. The first one would be for that, for the schools, and the project was estimated at $1.6 million. And I would propose that we add a third to that, coming from the Secure Rural Schools funds. And I'll, Jody can shoot me here or tell me I'm wrong, what have you. The second one was, is I believe we have setting in the Property Development Fund about $600,000 right now. And I would propose that we add to the Children's Center, that project was $300,000, that we add $150,000 to that, and that, and that would be my two here, but as I say, I'm totally open to the ideas here. What, in the resolution, what I would propose that we pass is a resolution to add funds to these projects if, for 2015, if the legislature would choose to fund these projects, we would add these additional dollars to it, or add these dollars to it to make it a whole project. If the legislature chooses not to do that, then that resolution then dies after 2015 and everything's, nothing's changed. The money's still in the pots and so forth. But if it does come about, anyhow, we're willing to put that in. And with that, I'd open it for discussion and to see. My point, only point is if we want some projects done, I think we're gonna have to put a little bit of chitlins in there with it.
A point of clarification, if
yes.
I may. So if I'm hearing you right, more or less allocating these funds on a, if they're willing to help us match them basis.
Yeah. Yes, we just put it in a resolution and say we're willing to put forward these funds if the legislature is willing to fund the other part of it.
Roger, thank you.
I guess my question to you, Steve, is if we had additional funds in line items on that list that we take to the state, are they more likely to be funded, or does that really influence the selection of projects? I mean, are we trying to front load unnecessarily, or would it potentially help?
All I can speak is what we have heard from various legislatures, the legislators, is they say it helps. Does it in fact help? I might take them at their word. Okay.
Yeah.
My only the school renovation is an easy one because we have that money set aside in a fund specifically for, it's a 70-30 proposition. The 30% is that's what that money's there for, is school projects. The others, all I can say to that, I mean, it's a great idea. My focus has been on the police station. And
right.
Until that thing is funded, I have, you know, we have not put money towards anything else when it comes to the capital project budget, solely focusing on every penny, you know, because I don't know what the assembly wants to do.
Right. But what I've heard from talking with them is that when they get into the discussions there, they're not sure exactly where the emphasis will be. So it could be on our building, but it also could be on one of these other projects.
You are correct.
And so what I'm hearing from them is we would be better having a variety, or at least three or four projects, maybe three, that have different aspects to it that have a chance for funding.
I honestly cannot tell you what's running through their minds well enough to be able to make a great recommendation.
Yeah.
But at taking the governor and Senator Stedman's word at face value, they said, you know, money being on there is positive, not negative.
Yes, Kurt.
A clarification on your question there to Steve was, at what time would we need to front load this? I mean, is now the time to have that discussion?
Yeah, pretty quick. I mean, I've already sent the list off to the governor's office.
Okay.
Generally, we don't get funding on these types of projects from the governor. That just doesn't happen. It could be surprised, but that's not. The legislature is where we get our funding from, and that, you know, we've got some time. So this is one of those kind of things that you need to be making up your mind on, you know, probably for middle of December at the latest, because
so take it
our lobbyist likes to have this in hand in kind of a finalized version, and it takes us a little time. We make about 20 of these little books that get distributed to all sorts of people, and so we need a little time to pull those together and get them out to everybody. So and then we can have it at the next meeting or the first meeting in December. And
yeah, so maybe that's what you could make a recommendation, that we put it on the agenda for the next meeting then.
Does that sound okay to you?
Sure.
You want a draft resolution for Terry?
I would propose
that. And we could include the resolution in the packet. I mean, that's not a, we could put that in the book that we send along.
Did you get the suggestions, or does he need to provide additional language? Okay. All right. That sounds
Thank
good.
You.
So then, Jay, moving back to...
I would move to adjourn.
And I'll second that.
Third.
All right.
Meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much. Remember to vote.
Yes.
Petersburg Borough Assembly meetings are brought to you by KFSK and Petersburg Wrangell Insurance, helping clients find out how to protect any valuable asset, from stamp or teacup collections to houses, boats of all sizes, and everything in between. Plenty of information from the local agents is available at Petersburg Wrangell Insurance, 772-3858.
And discuss it.